water, earth, fire, air. Months ago, all of us could come and go as we pleased in harmony. Then everything changed when the pandemic attacked. Only the TV series Avatar, The Last Airbender, a series our friends kept telling us about, would stop us from anxiously watching the news. But just when we needed to stream it most, it vanished.
About a year has passed since my cousin and I started podcasting about Avatar, and although we've all been through a lot in this past year, we believed Aang could save the world. And you know what? We were right. After ending the 100-year war, with the help of their friends, Avatar Aang and Fire Lord Zuko transformed the Fire Nation colonies into the United Republic of Nations, a society where benders and non-benders from all over the world could live and thrive in peace and harmony. They named the capital of this great land Republic City. Avatar Aang accomplished many remarkable things in his life, but sadly, his time in the world came to an end. And like the cycle of the seasons, the cycle of the Avatar began anew. This is Kin Folklore, Avatar, the Legend of Korra.
People of Republic City, welcome to Kin Folklore. We're back to explore the world of Avatar by delving into the complexities of its sequel, The Legend of Korra. I'm Andrea.
And I'm Paul, and we're cousins who podcast about our favorite fantasy and sci-fi television shows. After concluding our coverage of Avatar The Last Airbender, we decided to continue exploring the world of bending by first covering the comics and now following the journey of Avatar Korra and how she navigates the post-war world.
Last week, we visited the spirit world and met an old friend, Uncle Iroh.
Uncle Iroh.
We also learned that Unalaq's master plan included colluding with the dark spirit, Vatu. Bolin got to be a real hero during a failed assassination plot, and Jenora was captured by Unalaq while visiting the library. This week, we'll see what happens when Kara finally faces off of Unalaq and Vatu in episodes 12 through 14 of Book 2, Spirits.
The eternal darkness was upon us. I became caught up in the moment. And it seems, cousin, that the fandom is under the impression that we're saddened by the demise of Zhao. Fuck that guy. But we will not miss him at all. In the end, he became a deplorable man. What we will miss, though, is this adult content, which Kin Folklore will have. So buckle up. It's time for some harmonic convergence. While sailing aboard Varric's ship, Jenora is being kept alive in spirit water.
Hold on a second. Put some respect on the ship, okay? The name of the ship is the Julie.
Oh, man, shout out to Julie. That's what's up. That's what's up. I'm glad he did that. He showed her some respect there. All right, I'm with you.
A little respect for, like, the first time ever.
Ever. Maybe ever in the history of, like, the past or future. Exactly. Bolin asks his brother, while Korra is practicing her bending, if he's going to tell Korra about, you know, their breakup and Asami and everything that happened. And, you know, he convinces him using his own advice, turning around on him that, you know, last time you told me it was like, you know, ripping off a blood-sucking leech. You just got to do it. And he thinks, you know what? You're right. I'm going to do it. And then Korra wrecks a fucking mannequin. Like, she did what, like, the Melon Lord would have been scared. Let's just put it that way. Okay. And so Mako decides, you know, it's not the right time to talk to Korra. Tenzin's plan...
Okay, hold on a second, though. Let's just go back to the fact that Mako told Bolin to break up with Eska, who is definitely scarier than Korra.
100%.
Like, Korra's not going to kill you. I'm not sure what Eska is capable of.
Eska had murder in her eyes. You saw it when she was scooting down in the water trying to catch them. She's not fucking around. Eska don't play them games, you know?
Yeah. So, I'm just glad that Mako is learning from that his advice was garbage.
His advice was straight garbage. Like, for real, for real. Yeah, I'm with you on that. Oh, man. So, Tenzin's plan for attack is lacking a certain something. I don't know what that... What is that something, Andrea?
A strategy? Yeah. Like, any kind of strategy. Like, he's got nothing.
He did not hang out with his uncle.
You clearly didn't learn anything from your Uncle Sokka. Like, yeah, nothing.
Nothing. Nothing at all. And he's shading... He is shading Bumi, whose stories are far-fetched, but we will see that they're not so far-fetched later on in this episode. Like, we're gonna find out that, like, Tenzin needs to calm down with not believing his brother. All right? So... When they arrive in the south, they learn that Unalaq has captured Tunrock and wiped out the resistance forces. Katara is hard at work healing those who have survived the battles, and they bring in Jenora, and she's like, what happened? Like, she's really kind of concerned. And they tell her that she's in the spirit world, and Katara, you know, puts her in spirit water and starts trying to look after her granddaughter. She's not sure how long Jenora's going to last, but she does say that she's strong because she's lasted this long in the spirit world, right? So, with harmonic convergence a mere hours away, they're still without a decent strategy. After hearing Bumi tell a war story, right, he goes into all these things, and he's actually, you know, Bumi is a guy who likes parables. He tells these stories so that he can get across his point. He's not very direct. I mean, he's kind of taking after his dad and Sokka mixed up together. They'll go off on tangents.
This would drive me nuts, though. I like deeply empathize with Kaya and Tenzin, yeah, because this would make me insane. Like, just get to the point, Bumi. Like, okay, so what are you trying to tell us?
Yo,
like,
my guy Tenzin's eyes started twitching. He was so irritated.
I totally get it. I feel the same way. Like, I think Bumi needs more respect because unlike the rest of them, he's actually like fought in conflicts and stuff. But man, get to the point. What are you trying to tell us?
This is crazy. It's so nuts. He's going all around the bend. But Asami, being Asami, who is on it and always sharp, pick something out from what he's saying. She's like, no, wait a second. Maybe he's right. Maybe we should attack from the air, because what he's saying is that they were able to get the advantage by coming in from the air. We got this air bison. Let's use it, right? So good. And I have a plane. So let's go up from the air. Meanwhile, Eska and Desna question their father about why they're even still here. They're like, Pop, we wiped out the Southern tribe. The tribes are united. Can we go the fuck back home? Like we're ready. Like, we're ready to go. To which Unalaq tells his children that the mission is to change the world. What? Oh my God. This guy is giving me serious Phoenix King vibes. Serious Phoenix King vibes. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's crazy. Asami's plan is to fly Bolin and Mako, like Daenerys and Jon Snow at the Battle of Winterfell.
Listen, when I was watching this, I was like, this is the plan to attack Winterfell, to defend Winterfell. This is the exact same plan to defend Winterfell.
Oh,
like,
God.
they have two flying, you know, mechanisms. They have Oogie and they have the biplane. And they're going to fly around from different directions. I was like, so, like, is Unalaq the Night King? Like, what's going on right now?
I mean, he's about as effective as the Night King in this whole situation. Oh, man. So they're trying to close the southern spirit portal. And as they arrive, Bolin aptly says, I think they were expecting us. And they're attacked by forces on the ground. While they're being attacked by the forces on the ground, including some of Asami's own mecha tanks, the forces fight Asami, Mako, and Bolin. Korra, Bumi, Kaya, and Tenzin are approaching on Oogie and are attacked by an angry spirit. Bumi falls from the bison. If I'm going, you're going with me. This guy's like his style. And, you know, shortly after, Asami has to crash land because Eska and Desna are like, fuck that. We're going to waterbend and break up your plane. Like, you're not going to shoot at us like this. So, Oogie also makes a crash landing, and all of Team Avatar is captured. Pretty terrible. This is why you need a strategy. This is exactly why you need one.
Asami tried.
She did. She really did. The prisoners are taken to a tent where Tonrock is being held also. Unalaq arrives with his offspring, the most iconic duo ever. name one.
You know, no one has given me a more iconic duo. No,
they have not. They're really good.
Like if the listeners can think of a more iconic duo, then you know, hit me up. I'm open, but I yet to see one.
Oh God, it's so good. So he tells her that her era is over and her meeting Korra, and that when he merges with Vatu, he's gonna basically take her out. It's gonna be over. Even Eska and Desna seem a little bit shook up. They're like,
yeah, the look they exchange is epic. They're just like, this is awkward. Yeah.
He tells Eska and Desna though to keep everyone locked up, and he'll come for Korra after the harmonic convergence. I mean, even Tonrock is like, yo, what about, like, you're my brother still. You're, like, Eska and Desna's dad. Like, you're, you know, you're just going to give up your humanity?
You're still a person. Huh? Yeah, he's basically like, you're still a person. Yeah. Like, why would you do this?
So what she says, he's I give drunk zero with fucks. Power. I am the Phoenix King. You know what I mean? Like all he's missing is
he
the
really
banners.
Doesn't care.
He is so, he's giving me so much Ozai right now. It's crazy. It's so crazy.
That's accurate, because Ozai also didn't care about
it. Did not care. Exactly. Totally off of it. So Bumi hasn't been captured, though. And he has also now become a Team Avatar, you know, ally. And when he awakes in the snow, he decides it's going to be the rumble in the tundra between him and the spirit. He's bobbing and weaving and getting knocked around. And Bumi pulls out a knife, throws it at him, almost gets stabbed himself because the spirit just throws it back. But then he thinks, and this is giving me real Aang vibes. He's like, you know what? I'm going to play some music. And he plays the flute. And, you know, it's almost like Aang sat him down one day and told him the story about the nomads in the secret tunnel, because
he
gets down. Okay, he gets down and the spirit starts nodding its head and moving and shaking. All of a sudden, the spirit is in on this plan. We're going to go attack the camp. Right? Naga and Pabu show up and he's like, yes, okay, here's our orders. We're going to attack this camp. So in the prison tent, Korra pleads with her cousins. She's like, listen, Eska, Desna, your dad is really tripping. Please free me so I can save us. And Eska tells her that they'll never turn on their father. Desna says that if their father is saying that this is how it's going to go, he's the wisest man in the world, and he believes him that what Unalaq is doing is right. Okay, well, we'll see. We'll see.
He does seem to have forgotten that his father didn't care that he was injured a couple of episodes ago.
He, like, totally let that go. It's, like, not top of mind right now. He's like, listen, I got to keep it moving. So Bumi's plan is apparently to sneak into the camp and play music for all the spirits. Because he soothed one, it's got to work for all of them. He's doing it, and he's like, it's working. It's not working, because they all attack his ass. Like they're like, yo, forget that. We're going to get you out of here. And as it's not working, he's forced to get into a mecha tank, and basically it just jacks up the whole camp. And this is
before we move on to that, can we just talk about the dialogue between the two soldiers? Because that was I was dying. I don't like mother-in-law jokes, but this one was funny.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's two soldiers. There's a spirit, like, looming behind them. And one of them's like, if I wanted to have evil looking over my shoulder all day, I would have saved my mother-in-law. It's good. I enjoyed it. Anyway, go on. I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, it was like, funny. Just because of the fact that the off-screen... This is one of my favorite things about Korra. The like small dialogue pieces and the off-screen dialogue when there's like rallies, all the stuff, like the voiceover work, the moments where you like, they're like the subtle moments are hilarious. They're so good. So yeah, no, I'm with
you. Yeah, and the show like makes fun of itself sometimes. Some of the comedy is really solid.
Yeah, I like it. So, I mean, Boomy wrecks the camp, no question. And it
not
shows
on purpose.
You that when the spirits get into the tank, he ejects himself and lands in the prison tank. Naga and Pabu arrive and knock out Eska and Desna, and they are able to free the prisoners. And this is the certified proof to Tenzin that those crazy stories that Boomy tells, here you go. This is like, he tells these things that seem so far-fetched that you're like, how could you see? If I didn't see this myself, I would never have believed that Boomy, with a spirit that he soothed with the flute, Naga and Pabu took out a whole freaking camp of soldiers.
Right, but I do think it's notable that Boomy did not mean to do any
yes,
of this.
Yes, it's true.
This was total accidental luck. Kind of like his dad in Omashu, yep. Right? Like,
exactly. This is what I'm saying. It's so much Aang energy. It's crazy. Oh my gosh. Aang and Boomy. It's Aang and Boomy energy.
Yeah, it is really like he's eccentric like Boomy, King Boomy of Omashu, yeah. And he's also you know, gets into accidental problems like his father.
100%. So they tell, you know, Korra asks Asami if she can take Tonrok back to the tribe on Ugi so that he can be healed. He's not well enough to go forward and help Korra with what she has to do next. Korra tells Team Avatar that they need to split up. She'll close the portal while Kaya, Boomy, and Tenzin look for Jinora, and Mako and Bolin fight Unalaq. If they fail, they'll be trapped in there forever. As soon as they cross, Dark Spirits and Unalaq attack. Korra attempts to close the portal, but Unalaq is more than a match for Mako and Bolin. Like this is not actually that fair. Don't know what happened here.
I mean,
guys.
Even like Eska, like let's say that she had sent Mako and Bolin to fight Eska and Desna, I would have been like, that's it?
Yeah.
You're not going to send someone else with them?
Yeah.
Like at least send Naga and Pabu. Like,
no, 100%. 100%. But to be fair to them too, like, Unalaq is good, but I just don't feel like, I feel like Vatu could have chosen a better host.
Oh, 100%.
You know what 100%. I mean? Like, you know, Rava merging with Wan better than like Vatu merging with Unalaq. You know what I mean? Like, kind of crazy.
Yeah, and I don't mean to diminish that Bolin and Mako, they're very good benders. But Unalaq has much more experience than them. He's skilled in bending that they don't even fully understand.
Yeah.
Like,
they're pro benders. You gotta wonder, like, it's almost like boxing. Like, sometimes, like, in boxing, all you can do is throw them hands. So, but in the street fight, everything's on the table. And I feel like Unalaq is like a street fighter, and Mako and Bolin are like, they're in this thing trying to box still. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, totally.
So to close it out, as the planets align, harmonic convergence starts, and the portals connect. This covers the entire world in darkness, like a purple darkness. Like the whole world is like going over there. It almost was like, I mean, think Purple Rain, but with like evil. You know what I mean? Like that's what it looked like. And the spirit and the physical worlds begin to merge as Vatu breaks free from his prison.
Oof.
Yeah.
This doesn't look too good for Team Avatar.
No, it's going really bad. Going really, really bad. Almost like going to the north and trying to like kidnap a white. It's a bad plan.
Episode 13, Darkness Falls. Vatu's first words are to Korra, and she tells him she's not going to allow him to merge with Unalaq. She manages to bend Unalaq through the portal and sends Mako and Bolin after him.
She tosses him. She
throws him like a rag. Like, it's pretty.
Sorry, good.
No, I mean, it's pretty cool. Yeah. But where was that energy before Korra?
That's what I'm saying. I'm like, and why are you monologuing? Why are you telling Vatu, I'm not going to let you murder? Just don't let him. Just don't let him.
Okay, so she prepares to fight Vatu. Elsewhere in the spirit world, Tenzin, Kaya, and Bumi are wandering through a forest looking for Jinora. And, you know... Mm-hmm. Things are not going great because these three are not very good at working together. Per usual, Katara and Aang's children are bickering rather than actually looking for Jinora. Tenzin decides they need a spirit guide. And so he asks what he thinks is a friendly spirit in a tree, and that doesn't go where.
I mean, what would give him the impression that it was a friendly spirit? Every
I don't
human
know. It's hanging
ever...
out in the darkness in a tree. Like, I don't understand.
And let's just say that we've met very few friendly spirits. Like, hasn't been a bunch. You know what I mean? It's only been a couple.
And Jinora's not with you. Like, if you're looking for someone who understands the spirits, like, you need to have Jinora with you before you just pick a random spirit guide.
Yeah, tough look.
Anyway,
for Tenzin
just striking out.
Yeah, tough look. That's a tough look for Tenzin, the spiritual master who needs his daughter to basically be like, listen, that's a good spirit. That's a bad spirit.
So the angry spirit chases them over a cliff. And they wander around and continue to bicker when Iroh appears.
They roll up on him. There he is. It's been like 40 years since I last saw
years.
You.
40 years, yeah. We'll talk more about this later because I have feelings about this second Iroh appearance. Yeah. So Iroh tells them they shouldn't be here. Basically, darkness has taken over. And if they travel too deeply into the spirit world, they'll travel to a place where only the lost will ever find you. Mm. But this gives Tenzin an idea. He decides he's going to reawaken the spirit that just told them to leave him alone. Like, he was just like, I don't want to help you get out of here. That spirit then tosses them over a cliff and throws them into the fog of lost souls.
Oh, man. What a fog. It's this is where it really starts to get good. What a fog.
Tenzin tells Kaya and Bumi that the fog itself is actually a spirit that infects your mind with your worst memories and insecurities. Mm-hmm. And just then, we see our old friend Zhao.
I've got to capture the Avatar. I must do it. I must find him. Oh, it's you. You're a little older, look different, but I will have you. I will take you down. Victory will be mine. This fucking guy, he's talking about being the moon slayer and all kinds of other bullshit. What is wrong with him?
He's I was speechless.
You love to see that this is what happened to him. You just love to see
it. This is perfect. This is a perfect punishment for him. Yeah. What a terrible guy.
Oh my gosh.
So Tenzin ties all of them together because obviously he wants Bumi and Kaya to stay close so they can move through the fog and find Jinora. But as the fog begins to infect their minds, Bumi and Kaya both run away in fear, mm-hmm. leaving Tenzin completely alone. You know, back at the conflict with Korra and Vatu, things aren't going super well.
No.
He manages to get the upper hand on her, and she enters the Avatar state and appears to be able to trap Vatu again. Just outside the portal, Unalaq manages to defeat Bolin and Mako with an assist from Eska, who scares the crap out of Bolin just by being present.
Hello, my little turtle duck. Oh my god, it's good.
And he heads back through the portal to face Korra. Unalaq manages to stop Korra from trapping Vatu, and he merges with Vatu. And his first action is to absorb the energy from the portal. Unalaq tells Korra that a new era will begin, and he will lead the spirits and humans as the new Avatar. Korra isn't about this because she's still the Avatar, and you have to deal with it.
Yes, 100%. She's like, what? Yes, she's not
so
having
she fights him and she gives it pretty much all she has. And just as she's about to be defeated, Rava speaks to her and tells her not to give in. She can't let him win. Mm-mm. If she lets him win, the world is going to experience 10,000 years of darkness.
And as Bolin said, I'm too young for 10,000 years of darkness. Like, too young.
Bolin and Mako do try to help Korra, but they're captured pretty easily by Eska and Desna. And they're stuck in ice. And while they're trying to get free, you really see their personalities come through. Mm-hmm. Mako tells Eska and Desna that, you know, their father has turned into a monster. He's trying to use reason. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Desna does seem a bit moved by this. He's like, okay, that, you know, things are not going in the direction we thought they were going.
Father
to.
Did was okay with me being like almost killed. Now he remembers. You know what I mean? Like, that's it.
Bolin starts to cry about not getting to be with Eska.
Yeah.
And this works.
Yeah.
Eska is genuinely moved by her affection for Bolin. And, you know, she tells them while they will never defeat her father, that if they happen to survive, she would like to spend eternal darkness with them. I love her so much.
Good. So good.
They arrive just in time to see Vatu leave Unalaq's body, pull Rava from Korra's body, and imprison her. Bolin and Mako attempt to fight Unalaq, but are immediately subdued, and Unalaq tries to destroy Rava. Korra, as he's doing this, Korra sees her connection to the previous avatars disappearing, and she becomes weaker. When Rava is destroyed, Korra finally sees Avatar Wan disappear.
This is painful. I gotta tell you, I was.
Yeah,
I was
this was this scene was really, really.
We're gonna talk
rough.
About this,
and I'm not gonna lie that when Kaioshi disappeared, I was like, "Not Kaioshi."
This is exactly what I was just about to say. Like, I was sad about everyone, and then I saw my girl go. I was like, "Oh, come on, man! This is not it." This is not it at all.
I mean, I was even upset by seeing Avatar Kurik go.
Oh, yeah.
Like, this was rough. This was a really hard scene to watch.
Kurik's my guy now. I've mended my feelings about Kurik. I have a new perspective on him. So yeah, I was sad to see him go too.
Back in the fog, Tenzin is wandering through the fog, and he's basically using positive self-talk to remind himself that he can't fail, that he has to, you know, he has to be strong and get through all of these negative feelings that the spirit is making him feel so that he can find Jinora. Mm-hmm. He sees Aang in the mist, and Aang tells him that he needs to stop worrying about being like him. Mm-hmm. He needs to be himself. You need to be Tenzin. Stop trying to be Aang. Mm-hmm. When Tenzin accepts that he's not a reflection of his father, the fog disappears for a moment, and he's able to find Jinora, Kaya, and Bumi.
So cool.
Jinora,
I really thought that was cool. Like, you know, the metaphor for, like, fog being a spirit and almost like a spiritual haze, and, like, the fact that when he found clarity about who he is and was able to let go of, I am, you know, Avatar Aang's son, and I have to carry on a legacy, that he was able to grow, and then the fog was lifted. Almost like it almost felt like a metaphor for his own spiritual fog. You know what I mean? That he was in.
Yeah, I mean, Tenzin is probably my favorite character on the show, and so I think that's in part because his experiences are so relatable. Mm-hmm. But one thing that is very irritating about Tenzin is how obsessed he is with his father's legacy, mm-hmm. and the responsibility that he feels for keeping Aang's legacy going, which I find fascinating because, like, Aang's legacy ain't going anywhere.
Exactly.
Like, there's a statue of Aang in Republic City. Like,
yeah,
like
exactly.
He's not, it's not like it's, there's danger of it being lost in Tenzin's lifetime. I mean, we know that the legacy of Avatar's fades of time, but there's not much that Tenzin can do to keep it going further, like, once he's gone.
He saved the world from a 100-year war as a 12-year-old. I think his legacy is going to be pretty solid for a long, long time. You know what I mean?
Right, right. And I also think that he also founded basically the United Republic of Nations. Mm-hmm. I mean, his legacy, he's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. you know, him and Zuko are good. Mm-hmm. They don't. He should be worried about his mother's legacy.
This Katara erasure is unacceptable, right? Unacceptable. Like, without her, man, I don't even want to get on my tangent about this. Like, it irritates me all the time.
Yeah. It was nice to see him sort of come to terms with that and also realize that that's his insecurity. That's his fear. That's the thing that the spirit is using to taunt him. Mm-hmm. So Jenora wakes up and reunites with her dad. But as they try to leave, she feels something bad has happened and she has to leave to help Korra. Meanwhile, Korra is in some distress because Unalaq begins to take on Rava's form and announces that 10,000 years of darkness begins now and Unavatu is born.
Fucking dark avatar. Here he is, Unavatu. So, takes us to light and dark, light in the dark. In Republic City, the defenses are on high alert. My boy, young Iroh, General Iroh, you know, I might go ahead and just have to do something by chance because the Avatar asked me until the president shuts me down. Iroh, that guy. His forces are protecting the bay and the metal bending police are patrolling. A newly empowered Unavatu arrives and announces that it's time to take back the physical world for the spirits. He's like, done with this now. You know, we've got a bunch of spirits that have had to live in just the spiritual realm, and now he's coming back to take over the physical world. He pulls down the monument of Aang, super disrespectful. Like,
really disrespectful.
Like, it was the first thing he did. Like, he rolled in and like, yo, I'm tired of these avatars, and just like smashes on the statue. Oh, man, it's rough. And in Republic City, the police put up a good fight, and Lin Beifong manages to rescue the president, who she should have let die. I'm sorry. He should have just... That guy's not my favorite. Okay? We need new elections, emergency elections.
That is a rough hot take.
I mean, who's the vice president? Can we get the vice president here? Is that possible? Anyway,
is there a vice president?
There is no vice president. It's just the chain of command is the president to the chief of police. Say, man, I just wish that she would have just like let him go and then we would elect Lin. Lin should be the president. Lin for president. But Unavatu is too powerful, overpowers them, and sends vines through the buildings, including the prison where Varric and Julie escape. And escape in epic fashion, I'll add. Like, he literally tells her to grab the, like, you know, Operation Escape thing, and he puts on the pad, he says, do the thing, and then the wings come out, and they fly off. Like, he had a plan in case anything happens like this. He's always got a plan.
And can I just say, this is the last time we see Varric this season. Which I found incredibly shocking. I was like, okay, Varric's going to join in the fight. Nope.
No, Varric ain't about that fight in life. He's like, yo, he's protected his interests. And the funny thing is Julie jumps on his back with the backpack on her back and becomes his backpack and glider. Like, it's crazy. Julie, you know, she's a boat. She's a glider. She's an escape artist. She's an assistant. Julie is all things to this man. He's done without her.
Really? Really? Well, I mean, their relationship causes much stress in my life, as you know.
Me too.
I'm not a fan.
Me too. We don't love the relationship at all. But I'm just saying, I'm shouting her out independent of the relationship. We need for her.
Oh, yeah. Varric would be dead without Julie. There's no way.
Yeah, 100%. So Tenzin, Kaya, and Bumi find Korra, Mako, and Bolin, and they take them to the spirit water to heal them, which Kaya, you know, chip off the old block, heals him rather quickly like her mom would, right?
Yeah, she says she's not as good as her mom, but I do think she's pretty good.
She's very good. Yep, extremely good. So Korra awakes and tells them the horrible truth that Rava has been destroyed and so has her connection to the previous avatars. That the cycle is over and she is the last avatar. Tenzin tells
devastating.
Huh?
Devastating.
Totally devastating.
This is, I mean, this, you can feel her pain in this moment. This is really, really horrible.
Yeah. I mean, I said this to you, and we'll talk more about it, like, before we start recording. I feel like this is, this moment here, like, everything that happens in this particular episode, and this moment here, and the fight between, in the previous episode, between Vatu and Rava, where, like, you know, Rava is basically destroyed and all the avatars disappear. This is the moment where I feel like there's like a crossroads for Avatar The Last Airbender fans and Legend of Korra fans. Like, this is like where it gets sticky. And I think this is also a point, if you're a fan of both series, where you either you're out on this whole thing, you're like, I'm out on like Korra, like, how could she let this happen? You get angry at her in some ways. Or you're empathetic, I think. Or you're like, dang, like, you could feel her weight and what she's going through. I land more on the empathy side, you know what I mean, than that. But I definitely understand why it's, like, frustrating to lose all the other avatars that we love, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So Tenzin tells her that she needs to let go of her attachment to who she thinks she is. Just learning this lesson himself, right? And to connect with her inner spirit, not Rava. Her inner spirit, Korra's inner spirit. Korra believes him to be speaking about Rava, but he's like, no, like, you, Korra, like, connect to yourself, that she's more than Rava. He takes her to the tree where Vatu was imprisoned, and he tells her about the tree, that it's the tree of time, that legends say that its roots bind the physical and spiritual world together. He tells her that she should meditate in the tree to connect to the cosmic energy of the universe. Korra goes into the tree with Tenzin, and she sees all of her memories. We even see little baby Korra. She's the avatar. You got to deal with it. And she's, like, doing that. We see, like, all the stuff that happened previous seasons before. And we see the memories of past avatars, which was a little confusing for me, right? Like, her memory of past avatars or her memory of Wan? We did see Wan, right? So it's kind of, it was kind of wild to see that those were still there. But yeah, her memories are all there. What did you think of that, by the way?
I think it doesn't make a lot of sense.
Yeah. It doesn't make sense that she would still see Wan's memories. It would be her memories.
I mean, I guess it, because, I don't know. This is, I don't want to stop talking about the episode to get into this, but some of this magic doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, and we'll talk more about that in a minute, because it's definitely some of the things that make it hard in this last episode to really, like, wrap your mind around it, is the way that the magic doesn't feel tethered to what we've seen before or what we kind of, like, have come to expect even through this series. So, and we'll talk about that more. But as she's seeing the memories, he tells her that if she can connect to the energy of the universe in this tree, she will find a way forward. Korra meditates and finds herself facing the projection of her own spirit, similar to what we saw with Aang when he was meditating and trying to, like, realize everything with his chakras and ended up leaving because when he thought about Katara, he had to leave, right? This is the same kind of imagery. The projection leaves Korra's body and enters the spirit lights to face Unavatu in Republic City. The spirit Korra is a match for Unavatu. She gets the upper hand and attempts to find Rava within Vatu, but he tells her that what she's looking for is something that's been destroyed. In the spirit world, dark spirits head towards the Tree of Time to get Korra's body, but Team Avatar fights them off with all of their bending power. Eska and Desna even join in. They're like, yo, you're not going to hurt Bolin. You know, she's not trying to, that's not happening, right? So,
let's face the end of the world together.
You're so romantic. So romantic. Oh, Bolin is so good. Bolin and Eska, you got to love them. Korra's spirit is about to be destroyed in Republic City too. She's about to take a double L. Like, she already took an L, she's gonna take another one. Until she gets help from an unlikely source. I love this girl. She said she had to go help, and she comes in at just the right moment. Jinora's spirit arrives, carrying a small orb of light. When she releases the orb, the light touches everything around her. This takes me back to when she saw the image of Wan inside of the air temple. And, you know, she's just so connected to the spirit world. It's really great. And distracting Unavatu, the orb distracts Unavatu and illuminating Rava's spirit within him. Korra can now see Rava and reaches into him and touches Rava, and she expands, engulfing his entire form with her light. Rava tells Korra that they have to return to the spirit world so that they can fuse once again. They arrive just as Team Avatar is trapped by dark spirits in the Tree of Time. Jinora's spirit disappears and tells Tenzin that she'll see him soon. She wakes up in the spirit water and hugs Grand Grand, aka Katara. It was like so, so sweet. And she reports to Asami, Katara, Tunrock, Senna, that Korra saved the world. She, the humility in that, because Korra was lost without her, to come through and say, Korra saved the world. Wow.
It's her first words, basically. Yep. Korra has saved the world.
Yep.
I mean, Asami asks, right? How, like, what's going on? Is Korra okay? And Jinora says she saved the world. It, like, that actually got me a little teary-eyed.
Me too.
I was like, oh.
Me too.
Jinora's giving her full credit.
It's really great. It got me a little...
And can we just add, like, I didn't put it in the summary, but Jinora's... Iki, Milo, and Pema are watching this.
Yeah.
They see this. They see that Jinora helps Korra save the world, yeah. Which I thought was wonderful.
And Pema has, like, a great moment. Be careful, sweetie! She, like, yells out to her. It's so great. It's yeah. No, it was good stuff, man. So... Rava, Korra and Rava fuse again and lift the darkness that has settled over the world. So, you know, it's back, coming back to normal. As Team Avatar celebrates, Korra approaches Eska and Desna to apologize. You know, cousins, I'm sorry, but your dad was fused with Vatu and they don't give a fuck. Okay? They're like...
It appears cousin Korra believes we are saddened by our father's demise.
But I will not miss him at all.
But how do we explain this to mother?
That is the big question, right? That's the first time we ever really heard about mother. Like, we're like, oh wait, there's, oh wow, she didn't come on the trip, so she probably tied his ass too. She's like, you know what? Bolin asks Eska, he says, I don't do the long distance thing, hey, can move to Republic City? And she says, hold up, bro, you know, I got caught up in the moment. You know, I thought we were facing eternal darkness. I thought we were about to die. The Night King was upon us. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know you like that, man. I'm about to go back home and rule this northern kingdom. I got a throne to go sit on. You know, like, so. And about all that Republic City, you know, some second rate, second generation colonies that got turned into something. Nah, I'm good. I'm going to this old school northern kingdom, northern water tribe. So she shuts him down, and then Bolin kind of like feeling that shutdown is like, oh yeah, I kind of got caught up too. Nah, bro, you was committed.
No, he was in his feelings. Yeah. He really was.
Yeah, he was. So Tenzin asks Korra if she regained the connection with her past lives after reconnecting with Rava, and she says no, that the link is gone forever, she thinks. Goodness. Tough choice, showrunners. Just as she's about to close the portal, she stops and she decides that perhaps she shouldn't. Maybe the Avatar should not be the link between the spiritual and physical worlds. That maybe they should leave the portal open so that spirits and humans can live together. When they return to the Water Tribe, Mako tells Korra the truth about their breakup. But she remembers already. She saw all her memories inside the tree. And she says basically that we both know that this isn't going to work. We're just going back and forth in a situation. This is not a match. And he agrees, I think begrudgingly, because Bolin rolls up and is like, bruh, you need a hug, man. Like, you need a little love. And he does probably because it was it's tough. They obviously are not a good match, even though they've tried to make it work a couple of times.
Yeah, and they care about each other. Yeah. It's not that the love isn't there. It's just that it's not, their personalities make it that they're just not a good match.
Yeah, I agree. So Korra tells the Water Tribe that the Southern Tribe will remain independent and her father was elected chief. She also tells everyone that she is leaving the portals open so spirits can roam their world freely and humans can visit the spirit world. Wild. Like, I mean, like, Iroh was just telling everyone that they shouldn't be there. Like, is they're like, hey, you know what? You can go ahead and Go take a vacation in the spirit world. This is the beginning of a new age, she says. And indeed, it is the beginning of a new age. And that is how season two closes. So let's talk about some of the notable moments. Where do you want to start?
I just feel like we have to address some of the issues in these last three episodes.
I'm with you.
I don't think that it's painful for me to talk about this because I really like this show. I really, really like Atla, and I understand the conflict between some of the fans.
Mm-hmm.
But these three episodes are really difficult for a lot of reasons. So we need to talk about the magic here and why we're having troubles with it. And some of this, I think, is, I'll be honest with our listeners, I'm not going to spend like weeks and weeks and weeks thinking about how this magic works. And yeah. I think that's part of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
That there have been people who have said to me, well, if you, you know, learn more about the world and research, you can make it work, right? I'm going to go with what they showed us on the screen.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of questions. So we see Rava apparently being destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
And with Rava's destruction is also that link to the past avatars.
Mm-hmm.
But then Rava isn't actually destroyed. Rava is just diminished, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very made very small and absorbed by Vatu. So what I don't understand is why when Korra merges with Rava, who has gained some of her strength back,
mm-hmm.
why she still doesn't have the connection with the past avatars. And like, what does this mean? Is this mean that Korra is Avatar, the new Avatar One? Is she now like, you know, patient zero for the Avatar Link?
Yeah.
I just don't understand why this decision was made. And when I heard about this conflict, a couple of years ago on Twitter before I had seen Korra and before I had finished Atla. So my understanding was that people were angry at the character of Korra for breaking the connection to Aang. She didn't do that though.
Mm-hmm.
To me, the problem here isn't about what Korra's decision. The problem here is about how this magic doesn't seem fleshed out enough. I don't understand.
I mean, I think some of the anger is towards Korra though, by the fans that they couldn't separate out, because we love Avatar Aang and we love all the previous avatars so much, it was hard to separate out that like her like carelessness almost, like, or not being prepared enough or not fleshing this out in some people's minds kind of led to this break, which I don't really see it that way, but I can, that's the perspective I've heard, you know.
I mean, I think that they, again, I'm just going off of what we were told on screen.
Mm-hmm.
Korra has been sheltered her whole life. It is not Korra's fault that Korra isn't as worldly, experienced, practiced, etc. as previous avatars. That's on the White Lotus,
mm-hmm.
Tonrok, Tenzin,
mm-hmm.
and frankly, Avatar Aang.
And Zuko. Aang and Zuko. Like, honestly.
Yeah, so I just... So, okay, so then... The other part about the magic I don't fully understand. I had to watch this scene 15 times. What is Jenora doing? How did Jenora know to do this? Where did she get this orb? Like, what are we seeing here?
Yeah. I think those two things, this is where the magic falls apart for me, is that they introduce these concepts in the 11th hour. Like, I'll go back and look again, but I don't ever remember hearing anything about this tree being explained until Tenzin is walking Korra up to the tree. I don't understand. There's never an explanation as to why Jenora can stay so long in the spirit world and do what she did. We don't have anything that gives us this kind of like intro that there's a payoff at the end. And I also think that, what made Korra be able to use this meditation technique to grow her own individual spirit, and why is her spirit that big to be able to take on, you know, Vatu? and not, and she couldn't do that same kind of thing when she had Rava in her body. And the big thing is the connection piece, because there's nothing that said that when this happened that she couldn't reconnect it. And the only thing I can really come up with, quite honestly, is that it's very, very clear to me that the showrunners had a point that they wanted to make. That it was, and as a creative, I understand it. For them also, they made a decision that in order to free themselves from the past lore to be able to tell this story freely, they had to make, they could come back to it at some point, they could ever, but they wanted to make peace with the fact that they couldn't always be comparing this series to Avatar The Last Airbender, which is a super meta thing to think about. But I do think that's what they landed on. And I think they were like, okay, we want this to be its own thing. We're going to have to put to bed what came before it. And they made that decision. There's other ways I think they could have done it, and they could have explained it better. And I think the magic could have been explained better. And I think like there's a way to make her independent without doing that. Because you even hear Tenzin speak about this, about wanting some putting the past to rest before you can be yourself and be and move forward, and move forward not just based on the past, but based on the future and the current moment.
Yeah, it's just really, I find it deeply frustrating that this stuff isn't explained, because I feel that this world has been so good at explaining magic to us in the past. And this season, I think it's consistent throughout the season, actually, that the magic isn't super clear. Mm-hmm. And I find it deeply, deeply frustrating. And then I just, the other part of the magical stuff that I don't get is just like, how do, the spirit world is not like the afterlife. How are Iroh, Zhao, how are they there? I wish we understood that. All those people who were stuck in the fog, and there were a few dozen of them, how did they get there? Are those people all just being punished by spirits? Like, I think it's clear that Zhao is being punished by spirits, which is why he's stuck in the fog. But it's not clear to me why Iroh is just kind of walking around the spirit world.
It's never been clear to me why Iroh's in the spirit world. I think Zhao makes more sense to me, because if you remember where we last saw Zhao, he was swallowed by a spirit. And so that spirit took him into the spirit world. It's never explained like that, but for me, where I connected is it took him into the spirit world. And the way they explain the lost souls spot, that kind of helps me understand that Zhao was lost. Like, he was trying to destroy the moon and take over, you know what I mean? Become like, be the moon slayer. So he was like, he was totally lost. So to take him into that space in the spirit world makes sense, because, but they have the thing that's unfleshed out, which I hear what you're saying, is is the spirit world an afterlife? Is it not an afterlife? Are you there when you pass? Like, that doesn't really feel so clear to me. And I mean, I've read all the Kyoshi, both the Kyoshi novels. I've read almost every single comic. I've watched both series multiple times. And I, if a fan knows, write us, tell us, because I have not seen whether that's spelled out, that you will see in the afterlife, you'll see like other humans in afterlife in the spirit world. That's not what I've ever heard or seen.
The only thing that I can think of that Iroh may have done, because, you know, you said even when we were doing Atla that Iroh had a connection to the spirit world, and that connection was perhaps as strong as Jenora's. And maybe at the end of Iroh's life, he walked through one of the portals and just let his body pass, right? He just stayed in the spirit world long enough that basically what happened to Jenora, or what would have happened to Jenora if she had stayed indefinitely, happened to him.
Yeah, I could see that. But I also think, they haven't said this, but what my headcanon is that there's something that hasn't been explained yet that I hope they will explain when Avatar Studios starts making stuff, about Jenora and Iroh and their special capabilities outside of people who are the Avatars. I feel like there are people who have really special connections in this world, like Iroh, like Jenora, so to somewhat like Tenzin, with the spirit world. And some of it comes through learning, but some of it is just innate ability. And I have a feeling that the Sun Warriors and all the stuff that Iroh went through over there, that maybe he's more than just like a human like everybody else. He's part of forming this order, the White Lotus. There's something that he is connected to that makes him different than the rest of the humans that are in this world that are just, either benders or non-benders. And they haven't identified that or told us all what it is, but there's little clues that he's in a different space than everybody else. That's at least what I'd like to tell myself.
I mean, I think that makes sense. I guess, in my opinion, this thing about this Iroh being in the spirit world is less of an important question to be answered to me at this moment, because I feel like they can explore this in, you know, more content. But I'm just, this whole Korra breaking the link with the past avatars, why? Like, I think your meta explanation makes sense to me, but like, I like to use the death of the author to think about these things, and they just don't really explain it. Like, what if they're not around to explain this or to create more content? It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Well, if somebody takes over this IP, I'm gonna tell you right now, if they're a fan of this series, like we're all fans of this series, they will find a way. God forbid that anything happens to these guys. You know, they're young guys, so they'll probably be around. But you know, people will find a way to get that connection back, because there's nothing that makes sense. And part of me feels like there's still room for it to come back. Now, the creators have been on record saying, no, this is it. The connection's been broken. They don't seem like they're really that bothered by it. And maybe they have a point of where they're going to take their story that is different than what we even know. But I'm with you. I do land in that place of, this is the moment where most people were okay and with you, with, like we spoke about earlier in this season, that most people were with them, with Juan in the beginning. They could wave away like the lion turtles giving bending first to humans and not learning from Badger Mole. They could hand wave some of that stuff and say, well, there's a way to connect that, a way to connect this. But then this is where you lose a good amount of your fan base, because there wasn't a clear explanation about why the link was continuously was still broken after she reconnected with Rava. And that's a central thing that's unanswered, and it doesn't really go answered throughout the rest of the Korra seasons. But to be fair, the Korra seasons being freed from the previous lore start to gain their own identity in season three and four. They really do. Like, season three is probably what we're about to cover is probably my favorite season of Legend of Korra. And I think some of it is because they were freed up from having to go backwards, and they could just be present in the moment, and they introduce new concepts.
I would agree. Season three is probably my favorite as well. And I do think they really hit a stride after this season. Mm. But this season is really rough, you know. I think that this season, I think we talked about this before, but maybe this should have been season one, you know.
Yeah, it should have been season one, because then it would, and I think it could have been season one, and I think that's what they ran the risk of. They already gave, see, they went too far in season one, because they took away her bending. You know what I mean? In the beginning. And then Aang gives it back to her. So do you do that again? Do you like, oh, you were disconnected from Rava, and then you get back all the link to the avatars? Do you pull that trick again? And I think that's where the creators came to. They just thinking about it from a meta standpoint, they probably were like, okay, you know what? We're constantly having to compare ourselves to the old one, and we need to give ourselves some work to do moving forward with this new series. Let's break this link. How do we do that? And I also think, also in meta, is that eventually, like, the biggest problem that this all faced is that they were only renewing them season for season until this end of this season. Then they renewed them for two more seasons. And that changes things. That changes the way they had to approach it, how they wanted to end it, how they wanted to wrap it up, what they wanted it to look like. So I think Nickelodeon has some culpability in this to the creators too, and this is why we're so excited about Avatar Studios, because I think some of these questions are going to get answered. I just believe that.
Yeah, I mean, and I think there's ways to answer it and explain it better. I just wasn't crazy about this. I think, you know, at the end of Atla, they took a couple of leaps for me in the final three episodes.
Yeah.
And I just, it frustrates me to see that happening again. You know,
I mean, that's the thing that this is the big argument. People are like, okay, how did we get from, I mean, just taking one example, the relationship with Aang and Katara. like, how did we get from what happened at the Ember Island Players show to them happy and kissing at Bossing, say, in the tea house, outside the tea house? Like, that's a big leap without anything in between to fill in how that relationship was mended, what happened. Obviously, they don't have a plethora of time, but these are big things. What happens, I think, a lot in when you feel like it's not, it takes you out of the story, it's because something wasn't done early in the story to lay the groundwork for the payoff later, and then you introduce something like, three episodes from the finale, and that three episodes from the finale is not enough to give you enough traction to land that big reveal later. It's just not enough. It's Daenerys turning evil in one episode, right? It's like, that's like what it is, and it doesn't make sense, and the audience is jarred by it, and that's similar to what we're hearing here with the disconnection from the Avatar. That was never set up it was possible in Avatar The Last Airbender for sure with Roku and Aang talking, riding on the dragon. But they didn't touch that. That's a long time ago for the person watching. What if you just came to Legend of Korra? You have no idea that was a possibility because you never watched Aatla.
Yeah. I just wish they would explain their work a little bit here.
Yeah.
Well,
let's talk about the teachings of the White Lotus.
Wait, before we go on to the White Lotus, I did want to just take a second and talk about Korra's decision to leave the portals open.
Ah, it's a big.
What do we think about that?
Yeah, it's a big point.
I'm torn about it. I think it was the right move, but I don't appreciate that she didn't consult with anybody about it. She didn't talk to any spirits about it. She didn't talk to any people about it. She made this decision unilaterally, and it's a pretty big decision. And it seems like the type of decision that you would make after much consideration and consulting with people, and you'd have a transition plan. And I think that we'll see in the next season the consequences of her decision. But before we get there, what are your thoughts on Korra's decision to leave the portals open?
I land similar to where you are. I think that she made it unilaterally. I think she made it like just like almost like a, I left the lights on at home. I should go turn them off. You know what I mean? Like, I don't, that's concerning, because it's a very big decision. What I like about the decision is we've discussed this through the comics. We've discussed this. It's very heavy in the Kyoshi novels. It happens in Aatla, that the spirit world has always felt like they have gotten the second, that the Avatar always sides with the humans. It doesn't really help the spirit world. And so to some degree, leaving it open after we see that story with Wan and how the spirit wilds were the thing and humans really didn't dominate the earth the way that they do now. The spirits had free reign and people were back and forth. It was two one way with Wan's era. And then it's been two one way in all the Avatar eras afterwards towards the humans. And I feel what she was attempting to do was kind of create a real balance of like, no, we have to learn to have relationship with spirit. Like, it can't just be the Avatar being the spiritual guru and disseminating spiritual information. It needs to be humans learning how to live with spirits and spirits learning how to live with humans. And I think they did lay the traction for that a little bit with just the story of Wan and just her kind of growing and figuring that out along the way. So I kind of like the decision. I just think it's going to have repercussions that she didn't expect. Much like, Korra has blind spots in like how she makes decisions, and she's very impulsive. But I think, and it's going to actually bring about a lot of suffering for her, as we know if you've watched the series. And I think like that's what, she could have avoided some of that, by thinking about it a little deeper.
Yeah.
Consulting Katara, like consulting Zuko. You think maybe before you make this decision, you not only talk to Tenzin, but you hit up Katara in your tribe, and you maybe call, the former Fire Lord, and you say, hey, you guys knew the Avatar. What would Aang make? I'm disconnected now. What decision would he make in this place? What do you think? To at least get their feedback, right? Because most of Team Avatar is still around.
Yeah, and I also think, like, they're still gurus, Like, seek out some of the gurus who have really thought deeply about spirituality. Like, you're just coming to it, and obviously Tenzin has a lot of work to do. I mean, she doesn't even consult with Jenora. I don't know. I just It's a weird way for her to make this decision and then to announce a new era is here. And this is my decision.
I mean,
and
like, she's out here sounding like freaking Unuvatu. Like there's a new era. And I was like, oh, wait, but you just said that you didn't want you stopped the new era to kind of maintain. But I think that's the point that this whole season is trying to make that point, that we're going to make a point about a new era. Like there's going to be a new era in the world of Avatar. Korra is going to be the leader of that new era. And I'll be honest, like, it's very interesting because sometimes we create things as creatives and the creation mirrors a lot of what we're dealing with. And so, to be honest, a lot of the struggles that Korra goes through in season 3 really mirror a lot of how the fandom wrestled with these decisions previously, and what the creatives are going to have to look at and how they move forward with the overall world. It really does. As much, and I love this world. Like anything that drops, I'm watching. Anything that new books, I'm reading, you know? But it's just one of those things where I think like Korra's struggle really actually mirrors a lot of the to keep the spirit portal open, really mirrors a lot of the creative struggle with navigating the fan base between these two pieces of their IP that kind of made it difficult for them.
Yeah, I think I agree.
So, the White Lotus, your days are numbered. It's a new era, you know. what do you think about that? What do you want to talk about with the White Lotus?
So I think what we're coming to here is that this show is really about Korra finding herself as an individual. I read somewhere, I think it was on Reddit, it could have been on Facebook, but someone described Avatar as a show that's about a human, you know, learning, like understanding that he's a god.
Mm-hmm.
And Korra is a show about a god understanding that she is actually human.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's true. I think I wish I could attribute that to someone, because I think it's a really apt way of looking at the show. Mm-hmm. This whole show is sort of about Korra figuring out who she is. And like Zuko, she often struggles with her identity. She's brave and strong as an avatar, but she also isn't quite sure who she is as an individual. Mm-hmm. She doubts herself because she can't live up to her own expectations of herself. And, you know, you alluded to Tenzin's struggle with this himself when he was in the mist, mm-hmm. that his own expectations were kind of fogging mm-hmm. His spirituality and his ability to be, his ability to be connected to his own spirit. Korra is very eager to learn, but she's sensitive about feedback. And in book one, she finally figured out how to connect to her spirituality. And in the finale of book two, she takes it one step further. She learns how to connect to her own individual spirit. And that spirit, once she's able to free her from all the insecurities and fear, is able to face and defeat Batu.
Mm.
The spirit she embodies is the reason that she was born the Avatar. And beyond being the Avatar, Korra is an individual who's also shaped by her own experiences in the world. So Tenzin's message to her is very simple. Let go of your attachment to who you think you should be in order to embrace who you are. That's a really powerful message. And mm-hmm. we've seen it in the Avatar verse before.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lesson that Zuko had to learn, Sokka had to learn it, Aang had to learn it. And it helps Zuko, you know, join the side of good and really become the Fire Lord.
Mm-hmm.
So the hope is that as Korra begins to sort of peel back the layers of herself to get to her central self, to who she is as a person, that she will become a better, stronger, you know, more wise avatar. And I think that that is true of us as people, that as we grow and learn from our experiences, but also as we take away all of the distractions and the insecurities and the things that make us feel like we're not enough, we become who we're really meant to be.
Yeah, for sure. That's a great, I love that. So essentially what you're saying is like Korra's journey for her spiritual growth is like Zuko's journey for his honor.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Like Korra is chasing this notion of being the Avatar, yeah. like what it means to be the Avatar. She has all these lofty ideas about it. And we've seen that with her since the beginning. Mm-hmm. And Zuko was chasing this idea of what it meant to be a prince of the Fire Nation, mm-hmm. the heir to the Fire Lord. And none of it, in the end, he was able to become the Fire Lord because none of that actually mattered. Mm-hmm. As Iroh said to him, I think it's in the finale of Atla, like, you needed to do all those things mm-hmm. to become who you really are. Mm-hmm. You regained your own honor. You didn't need your father to give you honor. So I think Korra and Zuko, in my opinion, are very similar in a lot of ways, which is why it can be difficult to hear when people who, you know, love Zuko are really hard on Korra. We watch Zuko be bad for 2.5 seasons.
I agree. I know. It's totally true. It's like,
why Zuko, am I so bad at being good?
I don't know, Zuko. Why? Why is that? I don't know. You know, I hear you. I do. I feel that. And I definitely feel, again, like what we're saying, the part that really pops out to me in what we're just talking about is that Zuko was looking for his honor and it was always inside of him, like that he didn't have, like he had to, like you said, do all those things and it was always inside of him. He went, you know, like almost like the alchemist, if anyone's read that book, where he goes on this whole journey to realize that home was always inside of him, right? Spoiler alert, sorry about that, I should probably yeah. But the thing that I like about this for Korra is that she has gone on a pretty long journey. She starts out with being very physically who she needs to be. But to win this battle, she had to realize that the spirit wasn't about being the Avatar. It wasn't about Rava. It wasn't about anything. It was about what was inside of her. And that's who you see fighting, like you said. And I think that's the beautiful part, is both of them have that journey of like, okay, my honor's inside of me. Oh, wait, the spiritual growth that I'm gonna have and the spiritual life that I want to cultivate is inside of me, and I think that's really powerful, you know.
Yeah,
especially okay. since we can each do that ourselves too, right? So that's really cool. It's what fantasy is really here. It's like showing us and pointing to us the things inside of ourselves that we can also accomplish and we can also do. So so with that, we're closing the chapter on book 2 and opening up book 3 next week. So we appreciate all of the love and the feedback, and glad that you guys are still rocking with us through this trip through the Avatarverse. We hope you have a wonderful week. Hit us up on all our social channels, and see you next week.
Bye, everyone.